The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Hello, hello, hello. Got fingers and toes out to count up the episodes because we're up to 197 episodes of Spin the Rally Pod. And I know you've been here for every single episode. Thank you for downloading and thank you for joining the team once again as we talk all things rallying. I'm rally fan Lisa O'Sullivan, and joining me we have former motorsport team boss Mr. George Donaldson. Glorious weather in Scotland today, I understand. George?
Good morning, Lisa. It's absolutely stunning, but it is Scotland, so give it a couple of hours, it'll probably change, but I'm hopeful it's going to be stay lovely. It was lovely, lovely weekend. First one we've had, I think, all summer.
Yeah, actually that. We've had some glorious sunshine down in the southeast, and as we get ready to go back to school, the weather has picked up. So, Colin, you're all set to send everybody off to school. Colin Clark, the voice of rally.
Yes, good morning, Lisa. Yeah, my two have gone back to school. It's wonderful, but it's also a beautiful morning here in rural Staffordshire. There's a wonderful, that kind of early autumn heavy dew on the ground and that low mist. It's a gorgeous morning. And do you know what? They're saying 27 degrees later today. I might get the soft top down. Oh. Who knows?
Oh, get in. Get in. See, and of course, we wouldn't be doing this without Mr. David Evans, who you just have to wait to be introduced, David.
Sorry. Colin said one word that really cheered me up then and then ruined it later in a sentence. The one word he said was autumn, my favourite season of the year. And then the second words were 27 degrees.
Rubbish. Sorry, mate.
You see, David has this bag of jumpers and cords packed to one side, ready for autumn.
They're all unpacked now.
Sorry, it's going to be a no-jumper day, obviously, David. It's just going to have to be the dirt fish shirt.
You should have been in Scotland yesterday, David. I would have taken you down the Tay on the boat because it was lovely and sunny, but not hot at all. And you're just very, very comfortable and a lovely breeze. No midges at all. No midges in Perthshire. It was too windy anyway.
Did you remember, George? Did you remember to put the sunblock on the tops of your thighs?
It was terrible. That was 3 years ago and I burned myself. I mean, to the point that I had blisters all over my knees for weeks and weeks.
Oh, but moving on from the top of George's thighs.
Yes.
And for that life lesson that we all learn that, yes, you can get sunburnt when it's a little bit cloudy. We've all learned the hard way over the years. God, there's a lot happening, actually. I mean, we're coming to autumn, but rallying never stops. And I have got a very long running order here, David Evans, that we're going to crack on through. And I like the first point that we have on this. Who did what in the last month? Would you like to explain and expand on what question you would like answered here? Because it was my birthday yesterday, so I had cake.
Indeed, happy birthday for yesterday, Lise. Enormous happy birthday.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Another milestone reached.
Still breathing.
Thank you, David, I'm sure.
Sorry, as I was saying that, I was thinking, perhaps shouldn't be saying this, but anyway, it's quite early on a Monday morning. Just talking to drivers and stuff, you know, you get this kind of, it's been a strange month because it's almost felt as though it's half time. And we've had this kind of summer break in the same way that Formula One has a summer break. But our season is so incredibly weighted towards the sort of first half that we've only got four rounds left. And it's just, it was that sort of strange, we're halfway through, but actually we're not. We're nearly at the end of the season. And it was just a question of what have people been doing. And we actually have been away. We took a bit of a break for a few days and stuff. But actually, it genuinely doesn't stop, does it? Because, you know, when there's no WRC, there's always something going on. And Colt, you more than anybody knows, ARA just simply didn't stop, did it? Where were you last week?
Yes. Yeah, no, I was very, very fortunate. The boys doing the Dartfish Live Centre in North America, asked me over to cover the Ojibwe Forests Rally with them. And I have to admit, David, I did have to look up where Ojibwe was. But what a lovely part of the world. It's in North Minnesota, about 3 hours north of Minneapolis. And it's a great rally, David, a really, really great rally. I enjoyed it an awful lot, you know, clearly dominated by the appearance of that brand new Subaru from the Subaru North American Motorsport outfit. You know, an incredible car, really, really well-developed car, well-thought-through car, does exactly what it needs to do in that championship. But, you know, I enjoyed really all the cars. It was great to see that Subaru, but then you look down the field and such an eclectic mix of rally cars and personalities. It's the personalities that make, you know, North American rallying so, you know, so watchable and so enjoyable. Some really, really good rallyists who have been in the sport for a long time, who know how to pedal cars, who are very, very brave, and who work enormous hours on their cars to prepare them, most of them by themselves, for these events. And yeah, I enjoyed it. Really, really good event and an awful lot of fun.
You're just absolutely right, Colin. George, we saw that, didn't we, in Oregon this year, that there is just a little bit of absolutely everything. And the fact that these people can drive these cars is amazing, but it is also the fact that they build these tremendous cars in their own backyard and then wheel them out and entertain us.
And they're entertaining, David, because the rules allow them to be entertaining. You know, this is what I love about regional rallying, is that, you know, the rules are there to encourage you to be a little bit innovative with your engineering. You know, there were guys in a Subaru wagon with the most amazing wing on the rear of it. And it was more or less a homemade wing. But my goodness me, you saw this car on the stages and you step back, you know, a step or two steps back. They were so committed, so quick. And that was, as you say, right through the field. These guys build their own cars and they drive them. And they drive them hard. They drive them really, really hard. And it was entertaining. It was entertaining to watch. Apart from, I have to say, you know, Poison Ivy, I thought was a song, right? I didn't realise Poison Ivy was a thing. Didn't realise it was a thing. Within 2 minutes of turning up at the test stage, it was pointed out to me that it was absolutely lined with Poison Ivy and I had to be careful. And I'm going, yeah, right, what's Poison Ivy? You're taking the mic here. Oh, my goodness me. Oh, my goodness me. Poison Ivy is real.
Did you go wandering off?
I did, but I was restricted in my wanderings by the Poison Ivy and by the threat of bears. Lots of bears around there.
Yeah.
So I didn't go too far into the woods. But I learned a great trick. So here's the trick, guys. Poison Ivy, it's basically the oil on the ivy at certain times of the year that obviously you get it against your skin, and then it can take 24, 48 hours to develop into these horrible blisters that then, you know, they weep an oil which then spreads. That, oh, yes. My goodness. It is horrendous.
Quick pre-C is fine, Colin. This sounds horrendous.
It's awful. But here's the trick, guys. Here's the trick. So I was out there clearly in shorts and a T-shirt. The guy said to me, when you get home tonight, the first thing you do, you jump in the shower. I thought, yeah, fine. He said, but jump in the shower with a bottle of washing up liquid and wash yourself down vigorously now. Not just wash yourself down vigorously with washing up liquid on your exposed skin. And he said it works every time. It takes the oil off your skin. And he was right. I was absolutely right as rain. That you wanted to know that, didn't you?
But this is some of these.
I mean, the years of entertainment you gave me by standing at a stage end, either talking about the bears, stroke monsters that were coming out to the beasties that were coming to get you.
Big dog.
Yeah, stroke
dog. Nah, Georgie, there were proper bears. Small dog. There were proper bears there, proper black bears in the woods.
Oh, I know.
Couple spotted over the course of the rally.
Yeah.
But here's,
that's where you don't want some comedian with a bear ringtone to be hanging around near you, do you?
No, you don't. But this is the mantra. This is the mantra you live by when there are bears around. If it's black, fight back. If it's brown, lie down. Right? And I learned that.
What if you've got dodgy vision? Going, it looks kind of black. I don't know. It could be just the light.
You're in trouble. Maybe you're in trouble if that's the case. You know, if you're having to make those decisions, you're in trouble. But I think I learned that from Cocaine. What was it called? Cocaine Bear? What was that movie?
Cocaine Bear.
But we are. It's fair to say we are learning lots through the summer, because we were in where was I for the last Subaru test in Kentucky, and I discovered plenty about the copperhead snake. Honestly, there's an awful lot about America that most of America we absolutely love, but there are parts of it that just America perhaps just needs to keep to itself. And while I was standing out in the middle of the bush, your man told me all about the copperhead actually blending in beautifully, and I could actually be standing on one right now. He didn't need to be telling me that sort of stuff. But it's all super interesting. And of course, one thing...
I saw a copperhead when I was hiking I think we were in Arizona at that point. And we were walking up towards going to look at some old caves with cave paintings and stuff on them. And as we were walking along this path, this snake started crossing the path in front of us. And I swear it took 5 minutes to actually go all the way. You know, it came into... And it was going right, left. It just was the longest.
Like one of those big road trains in Australia.
Exactly. And when somebody casually goes, copperhead, and you think, that's not good.
Wow.
What? I thought a copperhead snake, I had this imagination it was probably something about 12 to 15 inches long. It was just a wee thing.
No.
But it's a huge snake, is it? Is it a constrictor or a biter?
I might be exaggerating slightly, but it was substantial. Apparently. It was substantial, and it's a biter.
It's a killer, David. Yeah. It's a killer.
It's a killer, is it? Wow. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a great name. It sounds threatening. I think it
eats bears. Yeah. It's
gee
that big.
Whiz. This sounds like some sort of monster. I think there's one in Loch Ness, actually.
Sorry, we're talking about rally cars anyway.
The other thing that I wanted to say, obviously, across the summer... it was great to see RX Fest, which was actually kind of at the beginning of the summer break. I think we went from Finland straight into running Dirtfish Live Center at RX Fest, which was a rallycross fest at HQ in Snoqualmie at Dirtfish Rally School, rallycross isn't the same in North America as it is in Europe. You know, in Europe, we're used to Johan Kristoffersen winning everything. In America, it's kind of a single venue, what we'd know as a single venue, almost got a bit of an auto test feel to it. But Dirtfish, congratulations to everybody, belatedly, obviously, because it was 3 or 4 weeks ago now. But we had, I think it was 220 cars entered for a two-day event at HQ. It was sensational. If you want to go back and relive any of it, and genuinely should, it was so entertaining. Just go back, go to dirtfish.com. Top left of the homepage, click Dirtfish Live Center and scroll down. We'll bring you to all of the action.
David.
Sorry, George, carry on.
David, it was a good point to interrupt, because I'm just saying I followed Dirtfish Live and I loved it.
Yeah.
But I was looking for the roundup video, you know, the fun video that we do at the
still
end
coming.
Of events. I felt that Dirtfish Live deserved that. Rally Fest deserved
it. It's still in the works.
Oh, thank goodness.
It's still in the works.
Thank goodness, because it really deserves that.
We have a brilliant new videographer, editor, Georgia. They are working on it as we speak. So yeah, honestly, it'll be there and it'll be there to be enjoyed. So that was the summer.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
That was the summer, apart from the summer that's still going on for far too long. Yeah, it was.
It was a busy summer, wasn't it? I don't know whether, is it because we're getting older, boys and girls, that... it just flies by. You know, remember the endless days of summer when we were younger and when we were, you know, enjoying summer holidays and all the rest. It just absolutely flies by these days. It really does. Anyway, flying by towards Acropolis, which is great.
Well, I was going to say, we've got to talk Greece next. The reset button being hit on Dirtfish's Life Centre buttons and everybody gearing up for the car breaker that is the Acropolis Rally. We do like to talk about the weather, and the weather has been crazy. I saw at the Burning Man Festival, it was all about the rain that's been caused. I mean, just incredible pictures from this place that's set out in the desert, absolutely tipping down with rain.
Is this where people are literally not allowed to move now because their cars will get stuck? It's in Nevada, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely. And it's usually about surviving the heat. Because you only you can't buy anything there. You have to take everything with you. They've got to kind of hunker down and wait for the poor weather to pass. What are we expecting for Acropolis?
We are expecting... George, have you had a look, George?
Potential weather madness is what I see on my schedule.
But just before we jump into that, I've got to say there is, and by now this story will be up on dirtfish.com. We're recording Monday morning and the story's going up first thing Monday morning. But have a listen to this. So we all, I guess, have been reasonably aware of the weather changing in Greece. So Clarkson, of course, communication number two. The headline is risk of severe weather conditions. According to the weather forecast, there will be heavy rains and possibly storms passing over the rally area next week, which is this week, obviously. The organiser is constantly monitoring stage conditions and preparing contingency plans in case the reconnaissance is not possible as scheduled. All competitors are required to secure their tents and other constructions in the service park and to keep their service bays manned at all times should the severe weather conditions hit the area. So, Cole, this is
in the same summer where we've seen extreme heat and extreme fires.
Yeah.
Well, last week we had some of the tests disrupted by the fires around there. And you're one of the biggest forest fires in Europe burning to the north of Athens, the north of Greece. It is quite remarkable, David.
Europe's biggest wildfire, apparently, that one. And just to interrupt there, just one second, point of order. It wasn't the fires that caused the test. It was the potential. And I think it was the local government that sort of said, no, you know, you will bring an increased risk, potentially. So therefore, So I think the fires around Lamia are out now, aren't they? But it is this enormous.
Yeah, absolutely. You're quite right to make that point, David. It is that increased risk, you know. And we've seen this before. I remember in Portugal a few years ago where, you know, we lost some stages because the authorities just weren't prepared to take the risk of, you know, tens of thousands of people descending on a region which was tinder dry. It's quite remarkable, David. George, I don't remember that kind of bulletin before. That's new to me, a bulletin that's coming out saying, you know, beware, the recce could be interrupted, man your service area. That sounds pretty biblical in terms of what they're expecting.
Well, what they're expecting is thunderstorms, Colin, and they're pretty decent thunderstorms when we look at it here. So thunderstorms can be very extensive. They can also be relatively local, you know, anything from 5 or 10 kilometres across to even smaller than that, to be honest, up to, you know, 50, 60 kilometres across. So it just depends on where you are. So you could be 10 kilometres away and dry and you know, the centre of it is taking an absolute hiding. We're looking at today potentially 26 millimetres of rainfall in a series of thunderstorms, which increase and then decrease throughout the day. Then Tuesday, it's a lower risk of thunderstorm, but a much higher risk of rain. So 85% chance of 43 millimetres of rain. That's a lot of water in a day by British terms, shall we say. By thunderstorm terms, it's probably just about normal. Wednesday, a good old belt of rain again. By Thursday, we're looking at thunderstorms, but just 3 or 4 millimetres of rain. Then the weekend, gorgeous. So, the recce does look like it could be interrupted. And when you've got 25... You know, if you've got 25 millimetres of rainfall coming in say, an hour, I don't care what terrain you're in, where you've got little creeks and rivers in the hills,
torrents will be coming down,
and they will overflow storm drains. I mean, and Greece is well equipped and well engineered to deal with that for the most part. But we're in forest rural roads, and they can flood and they can get rutted. So there's a decent chance that you'll get a bit of disruption if it happens to strike at the right place. And you know, the rally moves around a fair bit, so the odds are that something will happen.
It does worry me a touch because, David, you're quite right in mentioning 2 years ago, and we had some really heavy rain on the recce then. It then dried up a little bit, and the rain returned, didn't it, for the final day a couple of years ago. But I do remember there was one stage, you know, remember, there's two very distinct areas for this rally. There's the Peloponnese, which for me is the area that I really like. We get some really rough, abrasive stages, typical kind of, in my view, Acropolis stages, can be very, very demanding, very challenging. Maybe not quite so much in terms of undulations and topography. Then we head up towards the mountains, the Parnassos Mountains, in the back of the Parnassos Mountains. And that is where we had the real issues on the recce 2 years ago. There was one section in particular, I remember there was a photo came out of recce with about 8 or 10 recce cars stuck on this section in one of the stages. The mud was just impassable, even for four-wheel drive recce cars. You know, if we get those kind of conditions up in the mountains for the recce days in the mountains, they're recceing today around the Peloponnese. They move tomorrow up into the mountains. And if we get conditions like that, it could be very challenging for the organisers. But what's really encouraging is the fact that they're recognising that and they've put plans in place. And if anything does happen on the recce, fingers crossed, they do have contingencies to deal with it. But it is quite remarkable that transformation from last week to this week. And then hopefully, as George said, by the time the rally comes along, it'll be sunny and we'll have our shorts and T-shirts on again.
Good sensible rule, but the... I've seen very bad weather in Greece before. Thunderstorms are not new in Greece. Look, it's really mountainous weather. There's big forests up there, almost like alpine forests, just 80, 90 kilometres north of Athens. You're into alpine country. There's a ski resort 140 kilometres north of Athens. It's an amazing place. So, you know, topography like that generates weather. So they're used to getting thunderstorms in Greece in summer. It's not a regular thing. I guess it requires all manner of atmospheric things coming together. And without doubt, the climate changes. It always has done. So there's nothing new there. Good to know it's changing because then the world's in a normal place. But the reality is that what we're seeing here, Greece has seen before. We've had Greek rallies. The hardest thing that used to happen when it rained in Greece was recovering journalists. Believe it or not, that was the fun thing that teams had to do, because the road just becomes a wet Greek road, say around Parnassos, Lamia, and the like. They've got marble stone in them, so when they become wet, it is genuinely like a wet skating rink for a car. And you're literally going down the road at 40 km/h, turn a corner, and the car just goes straight. You might get yaw control, but you won't get directional control. And you learn very quickly, as long as your first corner you come to, you pick up the status of it is fine. But I mean, I remember picking 4 or 5 journalists up out of ditches, recovering them on one particular year.
I've just put in, and this is not an awful lot of use to listeners, so apologies, or maybe we'll put it on social, but I've just sent into the group chat a picture from Tim Fristos, a place called Tim Fristos, which is just to the west of Lamia. It's a webcam picture from 9 minutes ago. So 9:24 local time in the morning, and it's 14 degrees. And it looks like it's 80% humidity, and it looks like it's about to bucket it down. Certainly, like you said, Cole, it does not look like the blazing blue skies. But, you know, on a human level, if this torrential rain does arrive, it can only be a good thing for Greece, because you know Greece needs to put some fires out, doesn't it? And that would be good. We're about rallying, so we're used to it. We will deal and we will continue with whatever the weather throws at us. But if it helps the people of Greece, then absolutely happy days. Bring on the rain. And that's generally my mantra, is just bring on the rain. I'm always happier in the rain.
Well, it's gonna, and so we've got our drivers that prefer certain conditions. If it's going to be wet, who is going to go, who's going to rub their hands, their gloves with glee and say, bring it on?
Step forward, Kelly Rovanperä. Oh,
without a doubt, without a doubt. He was the absolute meister, wasn't he? The mud meister 2 years ago. You know, that final morning, it looked as if he'd gone out on the wrong tyres. I think he went out on, he had one or two hards and softs, and it was absolutely treacherous as you like. It was wet, it was muddy, it was slippery. And it was like, oh my goodness me, you know, he's going to lose this one. He can't possibly win with any hard compounds on his car. And he went and just blew everyone out of the water, didn't he? Yeah, Kalle Rovanperä for me has to be the man, literally. But the issue here is, but it was the same that year. The issue here could be Friday, and it always is Friday, isn't it, in Greece? Don't forget that last year, Pierre-Louis Loubet was winning stages on the Friday. Sebastian Loeb led, didn't he, the rally at the end of Friday. So road position on Friday here can be very, very punishing indeed. But this bit of rain's going to help. But, you know, you can't look beyond him. You know, the question is, is he fully recovered? He says he's fully recovered from that back injury after that fairly hefty knock that he took in Finland. And then the other question, I suppose, is, you know, does he have to reassess his approach a little bit? In Finland, he was very much championship, wasn't he? Talking championship, not really too concerned about the win, talking about the championship. Didn't work for him in Finland. What's his approach here, David? Does he go with a conservative approach, or does he just get straight back on it and do what we know he can do?
It's an odd one. I would have thought exactly the same as you, Colin. I've not spoken to Kelly in the run up to Greece, but I did speak to Tom Fowler, the technical director at Toyota, on Friday afternoon, and we were just chatting, and that was exactly the question of what did Tom and what does the team expect from Kelly. You know, he's 25 points ahead of teammate Elvin Evans, and then I think it's something like 33 or something to Thierry. And Tom said, well, you know, Kelly's had a different approach this year. He's been about winning rallies, which I kind of thought, well, was he at the start of the year? And then, you know, it's very easy to get carried along with that whole, oh, what's Kelly doing? He hasn't won since New Zealand last year. But actually, when you think about it, you know, once Kelly did start winning events, he was there all the time. And I think we have seen a change of approach. And I think it's something that when you win a championship, you become kind of unburdened by that constant pressure, which we certainly saw him under last year, of just, oh, God, I just need the points. I need the points. I need the championship. Kalle Rovanperä, to me, does not seem to be the kind of driver that is already counting. Right, that's one championship done. Now let's get the second. Now let's get the third. We know that's not what he's about. He's about enjoying driving the car. I think he will come to Acropolis and just say, right, I'm going to win this rally. And then he'll go to wherever we go next, which is Chile, CER, somewhere. I can't remember. And he'll try and win the rally. And I think he is just about...
Chile, David. Chile we're going to next.
Chile. For me, it'd just be after winning events, because he's got nothing to prove. And again, we've talked a little bit about the summer and what we've done. I have spent most of the summer break arguing with myself about whether 25 points is a doable gap for Elvin Evans. And sometimes you think it is. You think, and of course, if Kelly has a DNF here, it's of course it is. You know, it's beyond question. If Elvin wins, or if Elvin has a good score, the championship could be, you know, Elvin could be 5 points up when we go to Chile. You know, it is on it. But at the same time, 25 points is that sort of psychological barrier you want to get to, where it's one rally, isn't it? You've won. You've got at least a rally buffer. So I don't know. I don't know. But I do know I've probably talked for far too long already. So
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But one thing I did want to ask before we progress too far into Callie Rovenpera and drivers is I wanted to ask George exactly what he thinks will happen when these roads this week have been so dry for so long. Does it wash the road away? Or what is generally, what's drainage like? Obviously, they're mountainous roads, the roads will drain and we'll get big kind of river channels. But what are the roads like?
The roads are, these are all classic stages. You know, we've got Bauxite, we're up there at Thieves, up in the mountains above Lavadia. I forget the name of that stage 6, I think it is. Absolutely gorgeous. And then we get up to the west of Lamia when we're going into Tarzan and all those mountain stages. I've driven all those stages, so tight, twisty, in many cases, very tight, very twisty. And very, very rocky, but somehow quite well-established roads, but they're just classic forest roads, David. So they have been driven into the mountainside. Greece is very, very rocky, but it's not just all solid granite. It's a mixture of sort of gravelly-type rock that breaks up. So I think these roads will rot out something quite wickedly, to the point that I imagine that even in between the recce and the rally, if there is a rainstorm on a stage and they don't want to lose it, they'll just have to go in and fill some ruts, just backfill it with some coarse and then some fine fill to make sure that they're there, because it will be horrendous. So car damage, highly likely, given the types of roads. So that puts an element of risk in there for Callie. That he will not enjoy in sort of tactical terms, if you like, because whilst he's the master of his own destiny in that he will set his pace and that will be his pace, I think this rally introduces an element of chance and risk because of damage to cars, especially given that it's going to be rain. We're just going to see a riskier event. I think we'll see a brilliant rally. Greece is always brilliant. You know, it's traditionally one of the slower events that we do. There are some fast stages in there. For instance, Bauxite way really, really fast. But Tarzan, by the same token, is very, very slow.
George, I totally agree with you on that. And you know, if we go back to Callie and to Callie's chances of winning, and David, the question that's been perplexing you all summer long, is 25 points enough? Well, the calendar works in Elvin Evans's favour here, because if we've got two tarmac rallies left, we've got two gravel rallies left, haven't we? So if we were going straight into the two tarmac rallies, Callie would have it done and dusted, with two to go, no question. He could drive around those tarmac rallies all day long, no matter what the weather. He could drive around them, get second or third place quite easily, no problems. But it's what George says, it's that element, that unknown element of risk of car damage. The slightest mistake, and okay, Rovenpera doesn't make many mistakes, the slightest mistake, heavily punished, big rocks, anything could happen. A DNF, on this event is a real possibility. And I think that's what, for me, keeps the championship really, really interesting, really interesting. We're lucky we're going to Greece, we're going to what is going to be a really challenging Greece, and that does keep it very much alive. But Elvin Evans is in the same position. He cannot afford, neither can Thierry Neuville, they can't afford to make mistakes. They can't afford not to be either winning this rally or finishing second, both those drivers. So the calendar is working for us and keeping things very much alive this year. And I think Rovenpera might just have that at the back of his mind. Might, I don't know.
So,
might just have
so
it at
does
the back
Elvin
of his
have
mind.
To go absolutely full ball, flat jet?
He has to win, David. Yeah, he has to win. He absolutely has to win. He has to win. And even, even winning might well not be enough, but he absolutely has to win this one. And he can win it. We know he can win it. Conditions, challenging conditions, your grip that changes. That's the kind of conditions that Elvin Evans in the past has absolutely reveled in. So, Yeah, if the weather plays a part in it, then Evans will be quite happy to take on that challenge. And he's well equipped, maybe the best equipped of all the drivers, to deal with really, really challenging conditions. Remember Corsica a few years ago, 2017 was it in Corsica, when he was in the, what, I can't remember which car, was it the DMAT car then?
Or was it 15? No.
Was it 15? It was 15 because it was the DMAT car, wasn't it? It was years ago. He's always been a driver that has been able to pick the grip, and he sees it and he feels it maybe quicker than any other driver. And I think this might just be a little glimmer of hope. You ask Elvin and he'll say, well, the conditions are the same for everyone. That is absolutely correct. But not everyone is able to cope with those difficult conditions with the same degree of confidence, maybe, that Evans
is. I think also adding to that, Colin, is the fact that Elfin all year has been driving at that pace where he knows he can, generally speaking, and we know mistakes happen, but very few and far between for him recently. He's pushing that pace and he's been managing to find the balance, not quite getting to the ultimate pace, say, of Kalle at times when it's frustrating him, I can't quite get there. But he's getting there at a measured sort of tiny little step each time to try and catch Kalle, who is, you know, managing it in such a relaxed way. Two different drivers, two different people, that's fine. But my point is, coming to this event, is that he's the guy that tends to read the pace on the conservative side, which gives you a little bit more survival on these tougher events than if you're just going into it in a relaxed way, saying, yeah, I'm managing it easily. Has Kalle got that bit of collateral as well worked off as Elfin? Maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. Certainly, he's an undeniable rally. You know, he's stepped into the realms of rally god in the same way that Sebastian Loeb and Sebastian Ogier have for me. Elfin's not quite at that level, but he's just so unbelievably close to it, but he does it in such a measured way. I've got a huge amount of respect and admiration for his approach. I think it's going to stand him in good stead.
Couple of points to make here, and somebody mentioned that the speed of this event, and it is, just to put that into context, Thierry, I've just looked up on EWRC-results.com, our fabulous sister site, of course. Go there for all of your results needs. In Greece last year, Thierry won. Obviously, it was a 1-2-3 for Hyundai. Thierry won at an average speed of 84.7 kilometres, which is 52 miles an hour. So we're coming off the back of an event which Elfin won 4 weeks ago or so at 125 kilometres an hour, 78 miles an hour. That's the difference. It's huge, the difference in average speed.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
So that was point number one. Point number two, Elfin winning Finland, does that give him confidence coming into Greece, do we think? Or I mean, is it, well, such a different event that you put a Finland win away and you think, right, now I've got to restart and reset?
I think anybody who wins Finland is definitely going to get some wind in their sails off the back of that.
God, safest, yeah.
You kind of think so, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. But he was again, and it frustrates me a little bit, but he's a realist, Elfin Evans, isn't he? You know, and he won't... He won't overplay his part at all, you know. And he said, didn't he say to you at the end of the event, David? He said, "Look, don't get carried away by this. I haven't found the magic solution yet. I'm still battling to find really, you know, a feeling that I'm at one with this car. It's not there yet. Yes, we got it right for Finland, but that doesn't necessarily translate into form for Akropolis." Yeah. He said that to you after Finland. I'm pretty sure he
did. He did, Cole, but it didn't really work, did it? Because I think, if my memory serves correctly, did you and I get a wee bit carried away there? I think we might have done.
Maybe.
Yeah, that was my point, was just, you know, sometimes it is frustrating. Elfin is incredibly realistic about everything. And all I was saying to Elfin at that point was, you know, everybody wants a Finland win. And you look at the likes of fellow Brits, Colin McRae and Richard Burns, desperately would have loved a Finland win. Of course, Chris Meek did just that brilliantly as well. But trying to say, sometimes drivers have said almost a Finland win is worth a championship, because it's the one where it's for the bravest of the brave. You know, you've got to have the absolute speed, commitment, everything. And Elfin was just like, nah, yeah, we don't really compare generations. Move on. Next question.
In fairness to Elfin, look, everybody else there that was going to be competitive there kind of crashed. So he really did measure the pace perfectly, and he was right on the pace, you know, within you know, a tenth of a second a kilometer, basically, he was in there. And when I say everyone else crashed except Doit Tamak, who didn't crash.
Everybody crashed out of sight of Dirtfish, which is very annoying. But we didn't
They're
stop
very
looking.
Annoying indeed. Yeah, no, you had fun.
We had our fun, but it was a little bit optimistic dragged across a boggy creek. Yeah.
Massive mistake.
Well, there were definitely snakes and bears.
Well, there was all sorts of horrible things.
Which are well known in Finland as well.
Beasties!
David, don't exaggerate, but there were definitely snakes. There were maybe no alligators. But you know, it was the shock of my life when I discovered there were snakes in Finland. Snakes that bite you. Yes! Oh my goodness me. When I remember during the COVID year, 2020, and we went and covered those tests that Toyota did. It was the first bit of rallying after COVID. And it was actually an Elvin Evans test. And it was a fantastic bit of road. And the cars came across the top and it was a 90 left at a junction and they shot out of sight. And in that corner there between the top road and the 90 left was this big field. And it had the grass had just been cut basically. And the farmer was there and I said to him, do you mind if I stand in your field? He said, by all means, in his Finnish accent, obviously, by all means, stand there if you like. But I cut that grass yesterday. And I'll tell you what, I've never seen so many snakes in my life.
Genius.
So I went, do you mean little grass snakes that just kind of... He went, no, proper snakes that'll bite you and you'll know all about it if they bite you.
Excellent.
I went, rightio, I'll find somewhere else to stand.
That sounds like
you.
A classic Finnish understatement. Yes, you'll know about it as your leg rots off with some wicked poison. You know? Yes.
21 different types of snake in Greece, Carl.
I was just about to Google what snakes are going to take your leg off in Finland, actually.
The Bosnian adder, the smooth snake, the blotch snake, the meadow viper.
Stop it.
That
stop enough
nice.
Of the snakes. We had interesting
just talking about snakes.
Do
you know what I've
day.
Seen this morning? As I woke up at 6 o'clock, ready for fresh as a daisy, ready for our podcast, a quick flick through social media. And our friend Jeff Mays, you're Jeff Mays from the Safari Rally. Jeff Mays wrangling a cobra. This morning was
that's
the video that
snake.
Popped up. Yeah, a cobra. And he said there's a YouTube video to come. What possesses people to do that sort of thing?
The fact that it's probably in your tent, David. You know,
that's going to say, the
I think, yeah. I think you're right, George. I think it was somewhere threatening his camp.
Right, let's talk WRC2.
Yep, please do.
WRC2.
No, oh, no, it's a statement. Let's start WRC2. I mean, it's been the gift that keeps on giving this year, hasn't it?
Oh, and then some. Absolutely brilliant.
Great. Absolutely great. The championship that just keeps on giving. There was some discord. I don't know what the right word is. Certainly some debate after Finland. When Oliver Solberg talked about the championship, and
aggro.
I don't want to keep
aggro.
Banging this drum.
There's been some aggro. We like the word aggro
a little bit, but we will every time we seem to talk about WRC2, I bring this up, so apologies. But it just frustrates the hell out of me that we've got different people on different agendas and who's not good. But actually, forget all of that in Greece because they're pretty much all here. In WRC2, it's Mikkelsen, Russell, Pajari, Solberg, Greensmith, Kajtanovic, Formo, Bilassia, Prokop. They're all there, the main championship protagonists.
Magnificent.
Just mentally thinking, have I forgotten anybody? Quite possibly. Apologies if I've forgotten somebody. But this is the one that we've kind of been waiting for, where they're all lined up against each other. And it's going to be great. You know, it's the point that Oliver Solberg makes consistently that people seem to keep misunderstanding. You know, he just wants everybody to fight all year. He wants to fight on tarmac, on snow, on gravel, on fast gravel, on slow, on rocky, on all of that.
David, you shouldn't pipe down on that point because it's a very, very good and legitimate point that needs... No, you do need to keep banging the drum because someone needs to listen because it is a top-class championship that is not getting the credibility it deserves. You know, it really needs... For it to be a completely credible championship, they need to listen to you. They need to listen to you because it isn't right. No, they do. They need to. Okay, they don't need to listen to you, David, but they need to listen to these arguments and to these points that are being made. Because you know what? We've got the WRC, which is great, but we know it's got. There are real issues with the WRC right now. You know, five cars potentially we had on day two. I think it was six we had on the start line on the Saturday, but it did look for a while as if it was going to be five. Real issues there. So what do you need? You need a strong, credible support championship. And we are 95% of the way there with WRC2. And it's a simple thing to resolve. It's a simple, simple thing to resolve, you know. You do it rotational with the rallies. If the rallies don't like it, well, I'm afraid they're going to have to live with it, you know. That's just the way it is. You know, they have to take a little bit of a hit for the greater good. And the greater good is a championship which is won by the person who is most adept across all the different surfaces, not who has the biggest budget and who can afford to go to the most long-haul events. You know, it's simple, simple to resolve, and it'll be, if it is resolved, it'll do a world of good for rallying, never mind just for WRC2. So, David, just you keep beating that drum.
Can I just say as well
how we've got such a European-centric attitude to the World Rally Championship anyway, because we talk about long-haul events, obviously because most of the teams are kind of based around Europe, but is the World Rally Championship, do we not need to kind of find some way, and WRC2 is also a world championship. Do we not need to find some way to actually make that less of a? We're going to South America, to Chile in the next event after Greece, and it's as with going to Africa, it's seen as extraordinary rather than as it should be as a world championship. It should be the natural part of the championship.
I would agree wholeheartedly, Lise, and you know ultimately the promoter's stated aim from a few years ago, and in fairness to the promoter, obviously COVID has stepped in and put a very big stick in the spokes there. But there was an intention to move, I think, to a 16-round calendar where it was 50-50. Yeah. It was 8 and 8. Yeah, so 8 in Europe and 8 around the rest of the world, so which still is a very Eurocentric championship. But I think, you know, you have to be realistic and you have to look at where the teams are based. Okay, yeah. The manufacturers are not, clearly. You know, two of our three manufacturers are in the Far East. In terms of WRC2, drivers can participate in seven events and they take their top six scores. That maybe we bring it down to six and we make it four European and two flyaway. There are ways to make it more affordable. You know, there's to have a centrally sourced service part for all of the. We've seen this before, haven't we, George? In PWRC, where the drivers may pay to freight their cars out there, but they don't need to take tents or infrastructure. It can all be provided for them.
Very successful format, David. Unbelievably successful. Yeah.
Maybe we
and
need
it should
to
have absolutely
comments.
Should be that. Yeah. And the point was it was a benefit to the competitors. It wasn't something that they compulsorily had to do in one way, but it was just such a it was a financial benefit to them. Of course they wanted to do it, and that's what the promoter needs to do now, bring it all together. It would be huge, and it would be so beneficial. It would need to be slightly better policed than it was before because people took advantage of it, but it was excellent.
But I mean, you look at this now, so we've got Mickelson is leading WRC2 by, what is it, 5 points, and he has done four rallies. He's finished every one of them. He's won two, he's finished third on one, he finished fourth in Finland. And then you've got right at the other end of the scale, Formo's done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's done 5. That's not many. I said, nobody done 6. So I'm sure somebody must have done 6 rounds already. So there's complete disparity that the guy who's leading the championship has still got potentially 3 scoring rounds left, which he knows he's not going to do.
Yeah. And David, it doesn't help because you want to be able to follow what's going on, don't you? You want to be able to build momentum in terms of, you know, the drama and the excitement. I suppose in some ways, you know, it's so confusing that, you know, at least we haven't got a situation where someone's going to win with 2 or 3 rounds to go. But I don't think that's the point. I think the point is that you need to be able to look at a championship and know who's leading. You need to be able to look at a championship and know who in second place, you know what he's got to do or she's got to do.
Exactly.
It's too confusing.
But it's not, Colin. It's not, because do you know what you need to do today? No. Today on dirtfish.com,
right,
you need to read Luke Berry's story about a six-way WRC2 showdown and who can still win it. Luke explains all. Luke is the master at all of this.
Yeah.
He's got his abacus out and he's done all his maths and he's got it all sussed.
George, remember on top of that hotel in Cyprus, George,
did
the odds?
Yes, that was very, very funny.
it was a similar situation, trying to work.
I think it was in Italy. I think it was the Niala Hotel in San Remo, Colin. I recall doing...
Oh, yeah, you might be right.
With a whiteboard up.
It was on top of a roof.
Colin did his pundit thing. It was very, very funny, yeah. The odds.
But look,
bear in mind that championship's formed like that to be very inclusive, because what it does do is it allows competitors to compete in a world championship a little bit on their own terms. Now, I understand the thing about points and knowing where we are and trying to figure it all out, and it's much simpler and straightforward and easier for everyone to understand. But it's a very inclusive championship that allows a lot of drivers to do what they want to do and what they can do and what their sponsors can do and what they can afford to do in a very inclusive way, and it actually opens it all up. It's just slightly different. I'll say I like it as it is. I like it as it is. Sorry
George,
to be a detractor.
I think it's changed. I just think its importance has changed.
Yes.
I think it's, the value of it has changed over the years. And yeah, I get what you're saying. It was designed to be inclusive, affordable, and all of those things. But, it now is a really, it's on the verge of being quite a prestigious championship. And we need to capitalize on that. The sport needs it to be better than just something which is set up to be inclusive, affordable, and all of those things. It needs to be more than that. You know, if you've got a very, very strong, WRC, then fine. Your second tier can be all of those things. But the fact is, we don't have a strong WRC, and we need WRC2 to deliver.
But isn't that a problem? Isn't that a problem?
It's a huge problem.
If WRC2 is going to be outshining WRC because of the quality we've got in there, and the fact that you've got twice as many cars and twice as many drivers taking part on some events.
Well, potentially that would be a nice problem to have if it was in any regard threatening the status of the top level. I don't think it will. I don't think it ever will. But it'd be a nice problem to have, wouldn't it? If you have a support championship that's almost as strong as the main championship. Yeah. Let's deal with that when that situation arises.
Well, aren't we close to that bit? I mean, have you ever? I mean, we do. I know I'm looking at time here, that we're kind of running out of time. But I think for people who work in rallying and on WRC, sometimes they're a little bit too close and don't see the championship from the outside. So when I do speak to fellow journalists who don't cover motorsport, who still have a nostalgic view of rallying, when they ask who's competing, and you basic limit, list the very small list of drivers that compete at the top level in rallying, they kind of look and say, and that's a world championship. That's how many people are fighting for the title each year. It's slightly overselling itself.
But is it? I mean, you look back historically, and when have you had more than four genuine, I think probably you could go back to a time when we had six drivers who would genuinely fight for world championships. And, an interesting that you might have 8, 9, 10 drivers who could win a rally through the year, but I'm not sure you'd have six. I'm not sure you'd have that many genuine title challenges
But we've got a manufacturer's challenge. We've got a manufacturer's championship where there's not going to be a team missing the podium, effectively. I know it's all about winning, but when you've only got three manufacturers tucked in, there are questions to be asked, aren't there?
Well,
that's true. We have been worse.
Always, there's questions to be asked. But this is the World Championship, and another interesting piece to look at on dirtfish.com is did Sebastian Loeb kill off tarmac specialist, gravel specialist, which is a really interesting read. And the championship continually evolves, but for me, we've never had a championship. Okay, you look at Formula One, which is apparently is blossoming and is blooming and is brilliant right now. you know, we watched Monza last weekend, and it was actually not a bad race. But ultimately, there was only ever going to be one winner. And as soon as Max Verstappen had got past Carlos, that was it. You know, the race was run, and he went on to beat. I think it was at 12 seconds or something. He was ahead of Sainz's Ferrari. So
yeah.
You know, I don't.
I mean, whoever said that watching paint dry wasn't a sport? The world seems to love it. You know? Sorry.
I would always defend the Italian Grand Prix. I have to say.
Well, yes, I would too. I mean, who doesn't want to go to Monza? I love going to Monza. I've been there a few times, and it's brilliant. But honestly speaking, I'd rather watch a support race where people are fighting for a win.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Yeah.
Guys, if we're talking championships, and are we almost out of time, Lise?
No, we've still probably got another 5 minutes or so.
Am I allowed to raise something that isn't on the agenda?
Go on then. We can always edit you out.
It just depends what it is, Colin Clark. Oh my goodness. Which direction are we going now?
No. We're going incredibly parochial, and I'm very, very sorry to our listeners around the world.
No.
We're going incredibly. British Rally Championship. What is going on?
Yeah.
What is going on? You know, we go to the Ulster Rally, one of the classic tarmac rallies, you'd argue, in Europe, with a fantastically full entry field, 6 entries for the British Rally Championship. We go to this wonderful new rally in Wales. Again, wonderful entry list. Your quality from top to bottom, 7 entries in the British Rally Championship. What is going on? No one's talking about it. And it worries the hell out of me for British rallying. Does it have a mention here or not?
If you are listening to this in different parts of the world at Dirtfish Rally, tell us what's happening where you are, because this has massive ramifications for the development of the sport.
It does. Yeah, but it's not. Listen, this is what worries me. You look at the Australian Championship and they've got a dozen Rally 2 cars competing. You look to championships around the world, and they're okay. Times are tough for everyone in motorsport just now, with budgets, with finances, and all the rest. But as far as I can tell, in Britain we are struggling disproportionately to other countries, and there has to be a reason for it, and it needs to be addressed very, very quickly.
Yes, I think you can just look to the MSA, can't you? Motorsports Association. Thank you very
Motorsport
much.
UK. The artist.
Yes, well,
say.
Same
but
thing,
I think
yeah.
You're right, Col, and it is parochial, but ultimately it actually isn't, because historically, if you chose one championship in the world of rallying that had at one point in its history as great a significance as the World Championship, forget your European Championships, it was the British Championship in the late 70s, early 80s, when the likes of Hannu Mikkola, Bjorn Valdegaard, Ari Vatanen were coming to Britain to show what they were worth in a hope of sort of stepping up to a World Championship. It was as competitive, if not more competitive, than WRC then. So there is a massive significance and relevance. And yeah, sure, your man David Richards, or these people can say, oh, times have changed, times have moved on. Yeah, they have. And I'm afraid that you haven't had the ability to move on with them and to find a solution, because right now the British Rally Championship is effectively dead. Nobody cares about it anymore in a way that, yes, I keep saying it is 40, 50 years ago, but it has that that history and that kind of relevance still. You know, there's not many places that you can say, do you want a British Championship win? And people would say 100% yes. I think we've still got that in rallying, but we've got very, very, very small window to rebuild this thing. And I'm not entirely sure what the direction is. But, you know, right now, I'm not even sure that the people at Motorsport UK are even registering that there's a problem. You know,
correct. I mean, David, that's entirely my point. Entirely my point. It's not being talked about. It's not being discussed. You know, we watched the coverage of Ulster. We watched the coverage of Ceredigion. And do you know what? Fair play to them for, you know, for managing to paint over what is a serious issue. Because just watching their social media coverage, you wouldn't think there's a problem at all. And it's like, guys, why are we getting this social media coverage? Why are they talking in this way when there are six cars to follow? Why isn't someone
because
saying,
someone's paying them to sell the championship? This is the problem with social media. It can really put a gloss on things, can't it?
I don't know. Maybe, it frustrates me because
maybe the point, Carl, here is that we dedicate an edition of Spin. I don't say that we do the bicentenary edition, all about the British Rally Championship, but I think there's definitely scope. And we talk to people like David Richards and we get them on the show and we ask them exactly what has gone wrong, where and which direction. And maybe we talk to the likes of Ossian Price and people who still, you know, have an interest in seeing British Rally Championship return to what it was and what it can be. Because fundamentally, you know, the massive frustration here is that we still have the likes of Kielder, Dolby, Dovey, incredible stages that just sit there.
Granite City Rally, David, all those forests up there, just amazing. Yeah. Just amazing up there in the northeast. You know, the 120 miles, so 180 kilometres of stage miles in a day, if you want. You know, and you could have a world championship up there, absolutely no problem with classic forests. 30-mile stages up there, 35-mile stages if you want them, you know, anything you want. Tremendous.
Do you know a stage that we haven't used for years, George, that I would just love just to be able to say it, is Clashindarroch. What a great name.
Where?
Clashindarroch.
Clashindarroch. Yeah. Sounds Aberdonian.
It's not, it's actually a little bit further west than that, but, I mean, gorgeous
Huntley,
forest. It is, yeah. It's just over a little bit further west.
Granite City,
would
you have done that on Granite City?
The Clash, and you would. You would go across to the Clash, yeah. You would. I mean, that's
disappearing off into the lands of nostalgia now.
It was. It was called the Clash.
Sorry.
We are pretty much out of time, but very very quickly, Acropolis this week. What's the plan for Dirtfish Life Centre? And why should we be watching? What's so great about the Acropolis? I mean,
Lamb Cliff to go.
I've cut the amount of time that you're allowed to say how amazing it is as well. So
it used to be the rally where you weren't allowed to crash. If any driver crashed on Acropolis Rally, they basically lost their drive. Henry Toivonen almost lost a drive with Lancia, crashing in 037 on about stage four. He actually crashed off with speed and he was ridiculed by all his peers beyond all belief, unreasonably, maybe possibly, but he was certainly hanging his head in shame when seen around and about. So, it's a rough, tough tumble of an event, and this year with the weather coming in, it's going to go back to its classic, unbelievably rough and tough origins, I believe, has the potential to anyway.
Just the roads, we've talked about it already, but the likes of George mentioned there, the sixth stage on the first day, Alatia. That's obviously the stage where 20 years ago, Marco Martin won his first WRC round. It was on that Alatia stage where the bonnet came up, and he had to drive peering through that underneath the bonnet there. So, the likes of Alatia, Livadia, and Caroots, you know, just great names. And great, it's a proper, genuine challenge. And I was writing something about Finland over the break, and you kind of think, oh, that's the classic done. It's not at all. You know, this is why we need these absolute classic names still in a championship. It's great that we're going to Chile and to CER, which is, of course, a Central Europe rally in Japan. But we need the likes of Acropolis. You know, it gives meaning and relevance and an absolute history to the championship. So it's just a thrill to land in Athens. I haven't been for the last couple of years. I think I had COVID, which I have to say, just before we go, COVID has revisited the household here in the last week.
It's been around again.
So, and then I was in America for last year, so I didn't do it. So I cannot wait to get back to Greece. So yeah, no, it's just it's one of those events that absolutely gets you.
Gents, yeah, there is one thing you have to do. You're going past LaGuardia, so you've got to go to the Corinth Canal on the north side of the canal, on the left hand side of the road before you cross the bridge. No, forget the bungee jump; it's nothing. Souvlaki eating contest in the little souvlaki places. The record is 37 at one sitting. You've got to have a bite of bread with each individual souvlaki. 37.
I
cut out around about 18 or 19, but somebody got to 37.
Oh my goodness!
It was a Toyota
that's
team right. thing.
That's slightly mad.
It was. They are mad. Delicious. It makes it easy to eat. They're delicious.
Colin,
I love it. It's a great event, Lise. It really is. I just love the unpredictability of the event. I love the diversity of the stages. Yeah. And you know what? The fans, the Greek rally fans,
fabulous.
Just, you know, they're amongst the very best anywhere. They're passionate, they're knowledgeable, and unbelievably welcoming whenever we go there. So I can't wait. I really can't wait for it. It is definitely right up there amongst my favourites. And the little bit of weather just makes it that little more interesting.
Colin, I would give your right arm to be there. That's how much I want to go.
Would you?
I really would.
George, I'd give you my right arm, George. I would give it to you.
Colin, you're the best friend anyone ever had. Thank you, sir.
I know, George. Sometimes.
I'm going to get you down that River Tay. The River Tay beckons you. I'm taking you down the River Tay.
But the next best thing to being in Greece is following it on dirtfish.com via the Life Centre. Plenty of content on the website. Dirtfish.com's got to be your first stop. Thank you for listening to the podcast. I'm going to leave these guys to discuss fishing and kayaking down, or canoeing, whatever your boat is, George, down the... David's
going to
just keep saying...
Oh, yes!
I mean, you've said that about nine times, and they've only just heard it, David.
I know, lamb cleft to go. Just one more go.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I've not found a good one of those in... Where are we going? Carmina Vula. There must
Thanks
be somewhere that does cleft to go.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good end, Lisa.
Bye. Bye, Lise.